care what your political, religious beliefs are. These are human beings.
The flag was hoisted before the world.
What does it mean to fight back? We have a long fight ahead of us.
Here I am.
Here I am.
Here we are.
Here I am.
Here I am.
With Shai Davidai.
My guest today is a singer, a dancer, a model, an actress, and a social media activist, and has one of the biggest smiles that you will ever see amongst people who are advocating for Israel and the Jewish people. So here I am with Montana Tucker.
Montana. Yay! Thank you for having me.
So glad we could make this happen. I'm so bummed that we can't do this in person. But the more important thing is just like having a conversation, getting to know each other better. Where are you zooming in from?
I'm currently zooming in from Los Angeles.
Is that where you live, where you spend your time?
I live in Florida technically, but lately I've been out in LA a lot for work and traveling all over, but born and raised in Boca Raton, Florida. So I will always consider Florida home, but in LA a lot for work. Where are you living in New York, of course?
I'm in New York. We're in Hackensack, New Jersey, in the Cave Studios owned by Adamit Productions.
Wow.
We're going to get to the Florida part, the Jewish part. But before we do, I'm going to start with a question that I ask everyone, and the first question on the podcast is, Montana, what kind of a Jew are you?
Oh, that's a great question. I'm so curious to hear some other answers. What kind of a Jew am I? I would say I'm definitely a loud and proud Jew. I feel like lately, I actually just talked about this the other day, but you know, my name is Montana Tucker. It's not the most Jewish sounding name, even though I think being Jewish means so many different things and sounds so many different ways, but it's not the most your typical Jewish sounding name. And the blonde hair, some people just never, when they look at me immediately, they're like, you're Jewish. I can't believe that. So I want to make sure that everyone knows I'm Jewish. So lately I keep adding to my jewelry collection, everything I wear screams that I'm Jewish, to make sure that no one can miss it.
Why is that important to you? Because so many other Jews would be like, oh, you pass as a non-Jew, like your name is Montana Tucker, you don't look Jewish. I don't know what that means, but people have a stereotype and it's not you. And a lot of people would say, I dream of being someone like you, you know. And there have been actors throughout history in Hollywood changing their name to sound less Jewish, to hide their Jewishness. And you are out here like not just not hiding it, but like throwing it in people's faces. Why?
I think because I grew up with my grandparents being Holocaust survivors, and I grew up hearing their stories my entire life. And they're literally the biggest reason why, the first reason why I started doing this advocacy work. There are many more reasons, but they're the inspiration behind everything that I do. And they would tell me stories that didn't matter how famous you were, how rich you were, how successful you were. If you were a Jew back in the day, you were deemed as worthless. You were deemed as evil. You were deemed as, it didn't matter if you were denouncing your Judaism, if you tried to change your name, none of that mattered back then. And so that's why it frustrates me so much, especially in the entertainment industry, when I hear stories like this, and when I have people coming up to me saying, thank you so much for what you're doing. You're taking one for the team. Because they don't want people to know that either A, they support Israel, or A, that they're Jewish. And so for me, I'm really trying to set an example, and I do hope that others follow, that you can still thrive in your careers by letting everyone know that you are Jewish and that and what you support. And that's really what I'm trying to do. And I do it mostly for my grandparents, but also for Jews around the world. And especially when, you know, for instance, when I wore the dress at the Grammys, the Bring Them Home dress, I had little girls dressing up as me for Purim. They recreated their own dresses and dressed up as me as Purim. I never in a million years would have ever thought that would happen. And their moms wrote me messages saying that they were embarrassed of being Jewish, and they didn't want people knowing that they were Jewish. But then they saw me wear that dress, and it inspired them to want to let everyone know who they are and where they come from. So let's get
into that dress. And I think I think a lot of people may have seen you, they don't even know your name, might not even know who you are, but they saw that dress, and that dress shouted, for lack of better words, here I am. Like, we are not going anywhere. It's a, first of all, a beautiful dress. You know, you're going to the Grammys. You're not giving up your fabulousness for making a statement. But the statement of the dress was, it's just a huge full body yellow ribbon to raise awareness for the hostages that are being held in Gaza by Hamas. Tell me about that process. Like, the first moment, like, how did you come up with the idea? Were you worried? What went through your mind?
You know, as a musician, as an artist, to get asked to go to the Grammys, it's like the biggest deal. You're surrounded by people that you look up to your whole lives, the biggest people in the entertainment industry. And I'm in all these group WhatsApp group chats. I know you're in a bunch of them too. And, but during the award season, we were trying to get everyone to wear these yellow pins on the red carpets and at the shows. And I know everyone was having such a difficult time convincing people to wear just a small yellow pin. It shouldn't be that hard to wear one. And no one really wanted to wear it. So when I got asked to go to the Grammys, I knew that I couldn't just wear a little red yellow pin. I had to make sure that everyone saw my message, and I knew that no one else was going to. And, you know, leading up to that moment, I've spent so much time with families of hostages, released hostages. I've been to Israel twice since before the Grammy. So, like, I was so attached and involved with these hostages, as I know all of us were and are. And I knew I had to do something for them, and also to show the world that, no, we are not going to back down. We are not going to shy away from what we stand for. So I contacted an Israeli designer who's out in Los Angeles. And I gave her only a week to do this. So at the time, she wasn't very happy, but now I think she's very happy. But we came up with this idea. Again, I had the yellow pin in mind, and I said, I want to make sure no one can miss it. So we did this yellow ribbon dress, and I never get nervous. I speak in front of thousands of people all the time. But once I got to the carpet and, like, I was alone and, you know, the cameras start going on, I definitely got a bit nervous and, you know, had some of the stares. And then after I finished, they came up to me and they said, someone from the Recording Academy, they said, okay, did you get everything you needed? Like, they were trying to scurry me off the carpet, and they brought me out there to create content for them, but they didn't know I was going to be wearing this dress. And they actually said that their communications department had a problem with my dress because they said it was too political and that they don't do politics at the Grammys. And so, I looked at them and I said, that's interesting. Are you aware of what this ribbon stands for? It's actually not political at all. And the girl, like, didn't really know what to say to me. And she said, okay, well, is it possible for you to remove the ribbon? And I said, no, like, absolutely not. And she said, okay, well, you can go back out there, but unfortunately the Recording Academy is not going to be able to share any of your content. So of course, like, inside, I'm so upset and I'm dying, but I'm trying to not show that, obviously. And I went back out there, and then 2 minutes later, Harvey Mason Jr., who is actually the head of the Recording Academy, came up to me and said, thank you for wearing that dress. We needed this. Can I take a photo with you? And then he ended up delivering a beautiful speech that night. And I don't know if you remember, but there were Palestinian and Israeli musicians playing together. And he did, like, a whole tribute for Nova and talked about October 7th. So it was a crazy moment. And for me, like, I didn't even know what was going to come from it. I just knew I had to do it. And I received the messages I received from hostage families. That's how I knew, like, we did something right here, because they finally felt seen and heard on, like, a bigger platform than just our echo chamber. You know, they felt like, okay, someone was actually doing something for them, and they felt really grateful. So that's all I could have ever asked for.
Yeah, it is. There's so many things to unpack here, and I want to unpack a little bit this story, because the first thing you said is you felt alone on that red carpet. Why do you think it was so difficult to get more people to wear, not like a huge dress like yours with all that big ribbon, but like just a small pin that says, I see hostages as humans too.
You know, it's so upsetting because if you look at the other award shows, you saw so many people wearing the red pin, which we all know what that red pin stands for. And so it wasn't hard for them to wear that. And they specifically wanted to make a statement with that pin. But again, like I said, I've had so many people come up to me who are at way different levels in their career. And they say, thank you for taking one for the team, because they don't want to deal with the death threats that I get daily. And I know you receive them as well. I mean, when you speak out, when you are a loud and proud Jew, or you're speaking out for Israel, for the hostages, you get attacked. It's just, it comes with it. It's just a given. It doesn't matter how many followers you have. If you are outspoken, or you are on the campus being outspoken, you will get attacked. That's just plain and simple. That's what comes with it. And people don't want to deal with it. You also get jobs canceled from you. You get, as a, you know, you hear about in the news, Michael Rappaport, shows getting canceled, Modest Yahoo, shows being protest. So people don't want to have that. They care more about their careers and about their, you know, lifeline, whatever it is that they care more about than standing up for what is right and for what our ancestors fought so hard for.
Yeah. You know, it's, you're right, because a lot of people say, like, I don't want to speak up because I will get attacked. And what I tell them is, you are already being attacked. Now you have to speak up. Just because it's not you in the tunnels, it could have been you in Hamas's tunnels. But, well,
and that's why I talk about all the time that if there were to be another Holocaust right now, it doesn't matter if you're speaking out, not speaking out, again, denouncing your Judaism, changing your last name, whatever it may be, you would go to the gas chambers, you would go to the camps. It doesn't matter who you are. So people need to keep that in mind, because I think people are forgetting that. And also people need to keep in mind that Jews nowadays have a voice. We aren't worthless. We aren't deemed as worthless. We all have voices right now. So if we are not using them, again, it doesn't have to just be on social media. It could be in the workplace. It could be with your friends, your family, whatever it is. If we are not speaking out for what is right for humanity, then what are we doing?
Yeah. No, 100%. But I want to go back to the red carpet for one more second, because, you know, you said that the head of the Recording Academy was all in and thanked you and supported you, but it seems like the machine itself didn't. The machine itself was trying to silence you. Like, you know, it's not that one girl that, you know, comes and tells you, like, can you remove the ribbon? It's, she's part of the system. Why was it so difficult for them to come and see you taking a stance? And I agree, it's not a political stance, but why was it so difficult for them?
Because again, they're probably scared too, that they're going to get, you know, and any company that has spoken out, any, even heads of companies, if they find out that the head of these companies support Israel in any way, shape, and form, they get attacked and they get boycotted. Like, it's just, it's crazy what happens to anyone that is in support of Israel. And again, what I did with the dress had literally nothing to do with Israel, by the way. It had to do with the hostages, who, as we know, there were and are American hostages. So that's why in all my posts and everything I do, I say, I don't care what your political, religious beliefs are. These are human beings. And we all need to, around the world, no matter our religion, race, whatever we think about this conflict, we all need to come together to call for the release of the hostages. That's why they've always been at the forefront of my content and everything I've stood for, and especially at the Grammys. But again, they don't want to deal with the repercussions. I mean, I haven't talked to anyone directly about why they were trying to silence me, but that's the only thing I could think of, is they don't want to deal with it. They don't want to deal with it.
Yeah, unfortunately, that's what happens when people don't want to deal with some things, is that they allow the bad things to keep happening, because they don't want to spend time and emailing about, you know, the repercussions of this. So they might as well just silence you. But in that way, they're playing into Hamas's hands.
Exactly. And I feel like, you know, no one wants to be the first. I feel like everyone is always so scared to be the first. But I truly believe if more companies or networks or big celebrities would actually use their voice and speak out, then others would follow. It's just going to take a few really, really, really high up people to speak out. And I know behind the scenes they want to, and they're just not doing it. So I think that's what's, you know, difficult, but kind of just piggybacking off of that, you know, I do a lot of these videos in public where I go around and I kind of interview people and ask them questions or have them ask me questions. And I always go into these videos thinking we're going to be attacked. You know, we have security there. We think, okay, someone's going to attack us. Someone's going to go crazy on us for doing this. And I always leave feeling like, wow, I just accomplished something. You'd be shocked at how many people just genuinely don't know fully about the conflict. Like, all we hear on the news is all the negativity and all the people just hating us. But there are actually a lot of people who genuinely don't know and just see what they see on TikTok or what they hear on the news, but they actually don't know the stories. And so when I go in public, I share the real stories. I talk to them. And it's amazing how many like really meaningful, impactful conversations we have. And they always leave with saying, thank you for educating me. Thank you for teaching me. I'm going to go learn more when I get home. And we don't know the spiral effect that's going to have on that one to share with his friends, to share with his family, to share with his classmates. You don't know the spiral effect that's going to happen. So that's why it's so important to keep educating, to keep posting, because you don't know who you're going to get through.
So what kind of things have you found? Because I've seen you do a lot of these kind of videos where you just go and you choose a specific topic. What is Zionism or about the hostages or about anything? You just go and you talk to people. What is like a few major things that you've found that people just don't know?
So I don't know if you know Luai Al-Sharif.
Yes.
You know him?
He's
amazing. You should get him on the podcast. I don't know if you're having him already, but he should come on. He's amazing, amazing, amazing. If anyone doesn't know him, he's a Muslim Arab peace activist. And he is the smartest person I've ever met. He's so educated in literally everything. He speaks like 10 languages fluently. I don't know how he does it, but he's incredible. And we did a video in public, and I think this was one of the most meaningful ones because and powerful ones. He held a sign up that said, "I'm a Muslim Arab peace activist, and I support the Jewish state of Israel," or something along those lines. And I said, "I'm a American Jewish activist, and I support peace with the Middle East," or something along those lines. And you know, of course, we got so many stares, especially for him. There were a lot of Arabs who were there that were not very happy with him holding up.
Where did you record this?
We did this in Santa Monica in California on the Santa Monica Pier, which is like a very touristy area. So we had people from kind of all walks of life there. And we actually had somebody who I believe was from Ireland. He was with his two little kids. And he basically said to us that Hitler was right. And we caught it on camera. Hitler had the right idea and that Jews are the reason for the problems in the world. And he said that in front of his two little kids that he was with, like with no shame at all whatsoever to say that. But then we had
Before we get to that, as someone who is the granddaughter of Auschwitz survivors, how did that feel?
You know, I get the comments all the time. You know, your grandparents should have died. We're not going to stop until you die. Or, you know, you deserve to be in the gas chamber, or we're going to burn you. Or I get those types of comments all the time. And in the beginning it got to me, but now I don't even let those bother me. I also have never responded to a negative comment. But to have it happen in person, that was the first time I had something like that happen to me in person. And I honestly was just in complete shock. Like I truly couldn't believe it. I think because we were having like a bit of a conversation with him before leading up to that comment. And then for him to just say that so casually, and I think it upset me the most that he was in front of his kids, because they are now going to grow up. They could have grown up not thinking this, and now they're going to grow up by hearing their father speak like that. They're going to grow up thinking that is normal and thinking that is okay and that is the truth. So I was just in a state of shock when I first heard it, to be honest. And I think only until I got home, because we kept filming, I think only until I got home, I realized like that just happened. I can't believe that this just happened. You know, hearing my grandparents' stories my whole life, like obviously I heard them as a child. I didn't really fully like grasp them. And then as an adult, when my Zadie, my grandpa passed away 4 years ago at 97, My grandma Lily is still alive at 96, and she's an Auschwitz survivor. Her stories, both of their stories are just beyond. But my Zadie would tell me stories of friends he was friends with his whole life. And the day that the announcement started happening that, you know, all the crazy things they were saying about Jews, and like right before the Holocaust really started, his friends the next day would just turn on him, started spitting on him, beating him up on the street, saying, "You dirty Jew." And then here we are today, and the exact same things are happening.
Wow. So there's that negative, but let's talk about the positive.
That's what I was saying. I want to switch from the negative. Because
you're standing
there
with Luai Sharif, and the Monica Santa Monica Pier. This Irish a-hole says what he says. But then you were talking about a woman.
I wanted to just share that, but I really want to share the positive as well, is that there was a Palestinian lady that said she was filming, and I said, "Hi, how are you? Like, where are you from?" And she said, "Palestine." And I said, "Okay." I said, "We're just out here today, really trying to bring everyone together." And she said, "I support you." And I couldn't believe it. I couldn't believe it that 2 seconds before, a random man from Ireland who has no ties to this whatsoever says that, and then this lady says, "I support you. I support your peace. I support you." And I said, "Can I have a hug?" I couldn't even believe that she just said this to me. And I was so grateful. And I gave her a hug and I said, "Thank you so much. That's all we want. That's why we're here." And it was a really beautiful moment. There were also a group of kids, of Muslim kids there. I wouldn't say kids, maybe they were teens. And Luai just really educated them, and they were genuinely interested in asking questions. Like, they weren't being combative or attacking. They were really having a beautiful conversation. I think that's what's important, to have these conversations. I think for so many people, they're scared to have these conversations with people who don't necessarily agree with them or think the same way. But I think these conversations are important, because how are we ever going to come to an understanding or ever come to peace if we can't hear each other and listen to each other?
Yeah.
So that's why these videos are so important and powerful, not just for the viral content. It's really for to get through to people. And I think when people hear you in person, obviously it's like a whole different thing than just online. But if you have a chance to watch, or anyone has a chance to watch that video, I think you'll see more what I'm talking about, but it's really powerful. And I think, you know, something I tell everybody is to try to have those conversations. I know there are people who don't want to hear us and don't even want to, they're just so combative, and they don't want to even have a conversation. But if there is an opportunity to have a conversation with somebody who might see things differently than you, have it, because you don't know what the outcome could be.
I really love that sentiment. I do believe that it's sometimes, at least for some people, easier said than done. You know, for me, I always want to engage in conversation, but sometimes the hate that I'm facing is so, so deep, and it's all targeted at me without even knowing who I am, that I want to have a conversation, but the conversation ends up being me trying to explain to the other side why I have a right to exist.
Yeah.
And that's a conversation that I will not have.
Yeah.
So walk me through your career. How did you become the person that you are? And at what point in your career did you decide to also include advocacy and advocacy work into your day-to-day?
Yeah, so I started modeling and acting when I was 8 years old. And now
8 years old. Wow, that's so young.
Very long time ago.
Okay.
But I started, I don't know if you're familiar with Barney the dinosaur. I did Barney when I was younger. I played Serena the Mermaid in Barney. And I did a lot of modeling acting when I was younger. Then I always loved to dance. I got into dance, then became a backup dancer for a bunch of different artists. And then from there, I just loved performing. And I didn't want to be a backup dancer, but I wanted to be the artist. So I became an artist. I had some songs in like the Step Up dance movie, one of the Bring It On movies. I had a song with Flo Rida when I was 16. So I did a lot of awesome stuff when I was younger. And then when I was 17, my parents went through a pretty bad divorce. So I ended up just kind of putting everything on pause for a few years because I just kind of had to deal with that. It was pretty traumatic. And then I guess that's something I don't share too much. So we were talking about sharing something. That's something I don't talk about too much.
It's okay if you want. If you don't want to talk about it, that's fine. But we can also talk about it.
Just mention that. And then from there, I kind of never stopped loving performing. And I went back and I signed a record deal with Pitbull, actually. And I signed to his record label, Mr. 305 Records, and released 2 songs through him, which was amazing. I had a song with Todrick Hall that was called Be Myself, about staying true to who you are. It's actually very relevant for what I'm doing now. And this is way before. So always just modeling, acting. Then I grew my social media following. I kind of got thrown into the social media world by this girl. Her name is Lele Pons. She's like one of the biggest on social media. And I got thrown into it by her and then started collaborating. And so that's kind of how I got my following on social media. And then when my Zadie died, I obviously was completely heartbroken. And anyone that knows me knows how close I was and am to my grandparents. They were and are my entire life. I actually always wear my Zadie's ring. This was his ring that I never take off.
Wow.
And this is his wedding band that I never take off, and his bracelet. So he is with me all the time. And when he passed away, I rewatched the show of Foundation Testimonials of both my grandparents. And watching it as an adult, you know, you feel it so differently. And I was like, I need to do something with these. I don't know what, but I need to do something. And we started speaking with a group of people and we said, okay, we're going to go to Poland. We're going to go to Auschwitz and we're going to do it. And then we started saying, okay, I have millions of followers, especially my biggest demographic was Gen Z. And I knew that, especially in the United States, Holocaust education isn't forced to being taught in every state, which is crazy to me. So I have the opportunity to educate these millions of people on the Holocaust. So we made a docuseries called How To Never Forget, which is, we made it for Instagram and TikTok, but the full length is on my YouTube. And we made it in 10 different parts. Each episode was about 1.5 to 2.5 minutes. We made it solely for social media and for the younger generation. So each episode was easy to digest, easy to share. You could watch one episode and not have to watch the other. And we were always planning to release it leading up to Kristallnacht. Coincidentally, at that time.
And just for people listening, in what is Kristallnacht?
The night of the broken glass, when all of the Nazis invaded the Jewish businesses at the beginning of the Holocaust, basically. So I always planned to release them one by one leading up to that date. And then coincidentally, all the Kanye West anti-Semitism started happening. As we know, anti-Semitism has always been here, but that was when it started really getting crazy with Kanye West, Kyrie Irving, and all these different people that were speaking out against Jews. And so it was kind of the really crazy timing. My mom always says that my Zadie is with me in everything I do. And I think he was for sure in that moment saying, this is why you were doing this. This is why you were releasing this. And when I released it, it was the first time a lot of my followers found out that I was Jewish. Again, I built my platform on dance and music. So unless you really followed close along, you might have not known. And I released this series and it really made a big impact for multiple generations. And so that was 2 years ago that was over 2 years ago, I believe, when I released that series. So that was kind of the first time I got into my activism, really. Before that, I was always using my platform with dance and music to, you know, talk about body image or anti-bullying or, you know, just bringing everyone together of all races and religions through dance and music. But that was the first time really talking about my like Jewish identity and the Holocaust.
And and the series, I should tell people, if you go on YouTube, How To Never Forget, which is also an incredible title. It's 23 minutes long and it's really worth a watch, especially if you have teenagers, especially if they're non-Jewish teenagers and may have never heard about the Holocaust. A lot of people are afraid to show their tweens and teens things about the Holocaust because they're afraid to traumatize them. It's not distressing. It's not traumatic. It's just the human experience of what it's like to be a granddaughter.
I think also the way we did make it was with the younger generation in mind. So I think that if a parent is nervous, that I think my series really gravitates to them, and it did make an impact in their generation, because they were able to digest it in a different way than like a black and white documentary. Or, you know, I mean, I always tell people, if they have the opportunity to meet a Holocaust survivor and hear a Holocaust survivor speak, you are the luckiest person in the world. But a lot of the younger kids don't think that way. And, you know, they can't really understand them, or it's hard to like relate. So I think with my series being a granddaughter, and I went there for the first time, so everyone was on this journey with me. It was my first time experiencing all this as well, after hearing the stories my whole life. And I find out more about my family while I'm there. And it's just really powerful. So for since I released that docuseries up until October 7th, you know, I was using my voice in many, many ways to combat anti-Semitism. Went to the White House a few times. I hosted Israel's 75th anniversary with Michael Herzog and Kamala Harris and Doug Emhoff. I was the host of that event, and, you know, went around to different schools. And so I was really, you know, doing this before, but once October 7th happened, it's like my whole world just crashed. And
yeah, well I want to get to October 7th, but before we do, I want to ask about your advocacy before that. You said that many people in your audience didn't even know you were Jewish. What were the reactions that you received, like when you made How to Never Forget, which I assume must have been a very difficult experience for you, not just the making of the documentary, but actually experiencing it firsthand. But then there's the secondhand experience of the comments that you received. What was it like?
You know, it was interesting before going there, and once I was there, you know, I have filmed movies and TV shows and all that, and always have a script, and, you know, I have no problem being on camera, but this is my first time filming something that wasn't scripted, and that was like, you know, reality. And I've never done something like that, and especially to have it be something so serious and so intense. So the filming process was very hard, and I was with my mom, who, it's her parents who are the Holocaust survivors, so for both of us, and it was her first time experiencing it as well. So to do it with my mom, you know, in one of the episodes, we actually stand in the same spot that my grandma, we think my grandma stood with, where she saw her mother get beaten and taken to the gas chambers. And there's a crazy story about what happened to them there that I share in my series. So it was very emotional while filming it. You know, I didn't even think twice before releasing it about the hate that I was going to get. Like that truly didn't cross my mind at all. The only thing that crossed my mind is that people follow me to see me happy and to see me dancing in the streets and to see me collaborating with fun people. And they follow me to be happy. They don't follow me to learn about the Holocaust and to see me cry. You know, that's not why they're following me. So to do something like this, I wasn't sure how people were going to react, only because of that. I didn't think they were going to react negatively because I'm Jewish or because I'm talking about the Holocaust. It was more so like, this isn't what they follow me for. And so when I did release it, I was overwhelmed with actually, there was a lot of love from it, a lot of thanks for it. But there were people saying like, again, your grandparents should have died. We're not going to stop until you die. Oh my God. You're making this all about yourself. Like, it was a docuseries that I'm posting on my Instagram, and they're saying, of course you're a Jew and you're making this all about yourself. Wow. So the comments were bad, but they weren't nearly as bad as they are, when you talk about Israel specifically.
So let's get, before October 7, let's get to Israel. What is your connection to Israel?
So I first went to Israel on birthright about 11 years ago, and it was one of the most incredible experiences. You know, usually people go on birthright with like a group of their friends, and I was trying to convince my friends to go with me, and I couldn't set it all up at the same time that everyone else could, and I just knew I wanted to go. So I went with like a friend that I was friendly with, but like I wouldn't think I would be going on a whole trip to Israel with them. And the friends that I ended up making on that trip are friends I'll be truly friends with my whole life. It was the most magical, incredible experience. I remember there was like one time we were staying in a Bedouin tent in the desert, like, and we were waking up really early the next morning to go ride the camels. And we all just had this moment where we were outside. And I remember like every single person in our group cried. And I don't remember what exactly it was that made us all cry, But I think we all just like, we're just in this moment together, and literally every single person cried. It was so powerful. I'll never forget that moment. And that was 11 years ago. And I just always said like, oh, my mom went to high school in Israel. I have family in Israel. And I always said like, one day, like, oh, I wish I could move there one day. Like, I can't wait to go back. I just always had this like amazing attachment and feeling towards it. But I didn't go back until after the 7th. I went in December of last year.
So
for the first time since birthright.
Yes. Let's get into October 7th for a second. And your advocacy and activism since October 7th, because it feels like while you were outspoken before, something got activated on the day or the weeks that followed it. What happened? What got activated inside of you?
You know, on the 7th, when I found out everything, it was like a feeling that I truly never felt before. I felt like sick to my stomach, like truly sick to my stomach over it. And I don't know if it's like generational trauma or what it could possibly have been in that moment. But I also feel like every Jew around the world felt the same. I don't think I'm really alone in that feeling that we all felt. But for me, like, I couldn't do anything for an entire week. Like, I didn't even want to leave my apartment. I didn't even want to look out my window because I felt guilty enjoying my beautiful view while this is going on in Israel. I just started thinking back to my grandparents and everything they went through. And this was our modern day Holocaust. It just was. And I couldn't believe the videos I was seeing. I couldn't even understand it. And so after that week, there was a rally in LA, like a rally for Israel. And actually, I've never been to like a rally for Israel before that. But I got asked to come and speak at it. And that was like the first time I really left my house since the 7th. And when I went to this rally, and you know, there were thousands of people there together only a week after the 7th. Everyone was united together. Actually, Floyd Mayweather came out and marched with me, which was very shocking and incredible. He's done a lot of incredible things for Israel. I don't know how much you've kept up with what he's done, but that was a very shocking ally, I think, for a lot of us to see him be so famous and so huge. And he's been to Israel, I believe, twice as well, or maybe just once since the 7th. But anywho, just to have, you know, people crying, people hugging, people being there together in this rally, I just knew that even though there were a lot of people there together, I knew that we were going to be alone. I started seeing what was happening on social media. I started seeing these big organizations, you know, Black Lives Matter, for instance, is one of them. I was out there for every rally and every protest during everything with George Floyd. And then I started seeing BLM posting images of I don't know the exact image of people on paragliders.
Yeah, the paraglider, you know, the Hamas terrorists paragliding onto the Nova Festival exhibit. Yeah.
Yes. I started seeing those images come in, and I just started seeing everything coming in. And I just felt like, again, this, my mom always says my Zadie's with me, but I felt this like my Zadie was telling me, like, you have to, like, you have the opportunity to make an impact. You have to do something. You have to do something.
Do you remember what you said at that rally?
I think the rally was like the time that I really realized, okay, like, we have a group of us, we're in this together, but also we're going to be outnumbered by a lot. And we need to, like, if I have the opportunity to potentially, I'm so grateful that I've built a platform of 14 million followers across platforms, you know, I have to do something. I have to. So I don't think I ever knew that it was going to like fully take over my life in this way that I can't imagine not doing it. Like, when people say thank you to me, I mean, I can't imagine not doing this now. Like, there is truly no other option. And I know you probably think the same. There's no other option.
But
and
I do feel the same, but it's interesting because I don't know why I feel it. And so maybe you can help me figure out. clearly there are a lot of people out there with not just as big a following as you do, but even bigger followings that may have even had family in the Holocaust who not only can imagine not doing this, but really are not doing anything.
Yeah.
Jews and non-Jews.
I just think for me, if I'm going to miss out on job opportunities because I'm speaking out for what I believe in, then I shouldn't want to work with them anyway. And they should, like, it's not a match, you know? I know I sound like a broken record and I keep referring to my grandparents, but it's true because truly Jews back then, and that's what I wish people would understand, that it doesn't matter. Back then, if social media existed, it wouldn't have mattered how many followers you have. It wouldn't matter how rich you were. It didn't matter how successful you were. It didn't matter if you were trying to bribe the not, like, it didn't matter. Like, you, if you would be sent to the gas chambers, you'd be sent to the camps, you would be killed. It just, I don't know how people don't get that. So especially when it comes from Jews that aren't standing up right now, it really makes no sense to me. I don't understand the logic. I don't, I really don't. I try to understand it, but I don't.
It doesn't make much sense to me other than self-interest.
And, you know, people don't have to, I think people also misunderstand that you don't have to go around holding an Israeli flag to show your support. You don't have to wear the big bring them home dress to show their support. There are so many other ways you can do it. But I think being silent should not be an option. It should not be an option for anyone. So whatever way you can use your voice, whether it's helping out an organization, whether it's posting on social media, whether it's attending an event, whether it's, you know, supporting, you know, the professors who are out there you're also on the front lines.
And the students and wearing the pin.
It's showing your support. I think it, I know you might think, oh, how can I bring the hostages home by wearing this little yellow pin? I've had people say that to me too. Like, oh, how is you posting this video? You know, negative people in my comments. How do you think posting this video is going to help bring the hostages home? Because it does. It raises awareness and you don't know who is watching that video. I remember speaking to Rachel Goldberg-Poland, who is just everyone's hero and the most incredible lady in the world. And I remember speaking to her beforehand being like, how do you do this every day? How do you go out there every single day and you speak all day and you go on anyone? She would speak to anyone who would listen. And she said, because you don't know who's listening. You don't know who's hearing you. And so you have to keep going. And that's what I believe everyone needs to hear, is you don't know who you're going to impact. And that one person that you talk to, you don't know whose mind's going to change. That one person that sees you wear that yellow pin, you don't know the effect that it's going to have on them.
So tell me about your activism, because some of your activism is going out and speaking. And actually, we've been on the same event at Cornell University. Other activism, like you said, is like showing up, having conversations, or trying to have a conversation, increasing some education, making the movie about your grandparents, How to Never Forget, is yeah, a sort of activism. But then you also have another type of activism through dance. And if people haven't seen this yet, it's I'm getting goosebumps just trying to describe this. You made this incredible dance piece on the grounds of the Nova Festival, where 300 more than 300 Jews, Christians, and Muslims who just showed up to party were massacred and many were kidnapped.
Yeah.
Tell me about that project.
Oh, yeah, that was also one of the most powerful things I've ever done, especially being there in person. And the behind the scenes of it was give me the chills to think about it. I beforehand built a relationship with Maran Steli and I, who, I don't know if you know her, if you've had her on, you should get her on as well. She is also an incredibly strong, resilient, powerful woman. She was at the Nova Music Festival selling her jewelry. And she got shot and kidnapped into Gaza for 54 days. And her story is just
And she was released in the hostage deal in November.
Yes. Yeah. And I built a relationship with her. And I, you know, for so long I still struggle with this, but I'm finding now ways to bring them together. But I had such a problem of, you know, I had my dance, my music, my acting, and then I had my activism, and they were just completely separate worlds. And I was having a hard time bringing them together because for me, dance is what brings me joy, makes me happy. You know, I all the things I do, and I wasn't feeling happy. I wasn't feeling joy from everything that was going on and what I was doing. So I was having a hard time bringing them together. And then I had this idea because after, you know, meeting more Nova survivors, and I went to the Nova exhibit that they had in Israel at the time. Now I've also gone to the one that they had here in LA. And people, they went to the festival to dance. They went to that music festival to dance, to listen to music, and to have fun. And, you know, the slogan, "We Can Dance Again," that was in my mind. And I said, I'm a dancer. Why can't I do something with dance to honor the survivors, to honor the victims? Why can't I? So I had this idea, and the organization that actually brought me to Israel, Combat Anti-Semitism Movement, has this amazing girl named Natalie, who is a Nova survivor that actually is now working with this organization. And I told her about my idea, and she loved it. And she said, there's actually a dance group that just won a dance competition. They competed with people all around the world, and they dedicated their dance number to Nova because they lost three of their members at the Nova Festival of their dance company. And so we contacted them, asked them if they wanted to do this video with me, and they did. It was very, very, very powerful. It was also their first time at the site after losing their friends. So that was very emotional for them. And we didn't dance anywhere near the memorial. We danced way off from the memorial. We wouldn't dance on the memorial, but we did dance where Moran showed me where she actually ran away after she was shot, before she was caught. She showed us exactly where she ran before getting caught. So that was very emotional. And then we had other Nova survivors that weren't dancers.
Was it like dancing, knowing that you were dancing where people were experiencing such extremely painful, scary moments?
It was one of the craziest things I've done, because whenever I've danced in the past, it's always been in a really positive, uplifting, happy way. But I think that's something that is so powerful about dance and about music, is that it can portray what you're feeling. It doesn't have to just be happy. It doesn't just have to be, you know, you can really tell a story through dance and through music. I really believe that. And so this number, we really told the story, but it was very chilling, because while we're dancing, we hear bombs going off, you know, we're right by the border. So it was very bizarre to be dancing while hearing the bombs going off, while having the survivors there. It was just like all these emotions that you can't really explain. It's like you had to be there to really understand it. And there was actually a moment that one of the survivors that was there, we were finishing up filming the dance, and she started getting, like, you know, it was like her first time back. And so she was feeling a little bit anxious, and she started crying and getting really emotional. And I went up to her and I said, listen, you don't have to do this. The fact that you woke up this morning and you even decided that you were going to come here is such a huge step, and no one's going to be mad at you. No one's going to care if you leave right now. I'm so proud of you for even being here. You are amazing. And she was crying, and I'm hugging her. And I said, please, like, you don't have to do this. Like, and she's like, no, I want to do this. I need to do this. And I said, I promise you, you can, no, we all love you. It's okay. And she said, no, I need to do this. And so she went from crying to then walking out. When we all walked together at the end of the video, and we're all holding hands, and she walked out there with, I'm literally getting chills, standing so strong, so powerful after experiencing that. And then the director, we didn't use this as part of the video, but he knew what just happened. And he goes, okay, now everybody dance, after we finished saying the words. And none of us knew that was going to happen. And the girls, all of the survivors that were there, danced for the first time since Nova. And they're all dancing. I mean, no, it's not choreographed. Just everyone's like dancing to the music and having fun and smiling. And it was just like the most beautiful moment to come from seeing her cry to then having her dance again. really the we can dance again, we will dance again. That was like that defining moment right there. And all of them, it was a very, very strong, a powerful day for everybody. We also had therapists that were there on site for the survivors to make sure they were feeling okay. And beforehand, before even doing the video, I checked with a bunch of people to make sure they felt comfortable with us doing a video like this, because, you know, it's still very current. It's still a very emotional, serious topic. And I didn't want to offend anyone by doing it. And I wanted to make sure everyone felt seen and heard.
What were the kind of comments that you received? I have to urge people, after they check out How to Never Forget, to check out this video. What were the comments that you received?
You know, I also wanted to do that video for many reasons, but also I knew that sometimes, especially with my followers that were following me to see me dance, they don't want to just see me talk about the war. Like, a lot of them might just roll away or not want to hear about this. But I knew they would want to watch a dance video. And I knew that that video was going to reach a whole different audience than my other videos were reaching. And it did. It really, really did. I mean, I don't even know how many views it got, and it got across platforms and then people were reposting it, but it got seen by a lot of people around the world. And the comments actually were the most positive. No, I can't say positive, but the most
heartfelt.
The comments weren't negative, moral of the story. Like, most of the comments are from people who weren't Jewish, who weren't Israeli. And they said, wow, I didn't see it this way. Like, thank you for sharing, truly. And then they shared it. So many non-Jewish, non-Israeli, non-Zionist, whatever you want to call them, shared that video. That was a video that reached a whole different audience because of the dance and the music. And they got it. They understood it by just a 2-minute long dance number, however long it was. So that's why it's so important to keep doing different things, because everyone relates to something differently.
Yeah.
And you don't know who's going to happen to come across this video and relate to it and understand it. And so they did through dance.
That's the whole point. The whole point of being an advocate, being an activist, is not using someone else's skills. It's using your own skills. I could never do that kind of video because I don't have those skills. No, I mean, you should see me dance.
I would love to see you dance.
It's actually very interesting. I was thinking about this last night when I was preparing for our conversation. I used to go before October 7th to at least one concert a week, sometimes two, sometimes like in crazy weeks, there'd be three concerts a week. Obviously, wow. My style of concerts would have been a little bit different, more in the hardcore punk scene. And I have been to one concert since October 7th. I just can't. It's just, yeah. I know we say we will dance again. I'm not there yet. And I think I'm okay with that. You know, I think for me, it's the hope that I know this too shall pass.
Well,
but it's also okay to be like, you know, I will get there, but on my own time.
I think that's something that's so important to say, that we all are experiencing this in different ways. And I think we can't judge anyone for their healing process or how they're handling this. I think this is also just something to say for the Jewish community too, that, you know, we all have different ways of approaching this, but as long as you're speaking out and doing something, I think we all need to uplift each other right now. We have so many people that are against us. And if someone is posting content that isn't your typical style, or maybe some people thought me doing a dance video was crazy. You know, I think that it's important that we all uplift each other and are there for each other in this time, because we're all doing it in different ways, but we all need to be there for each other.
Right.
And I think it's okay that you're not ready to dance again. I think that's totally valid and okay. And I think you are doing such powerful and incredible work. And you also, there are many people who feel that way as well, that are right there with you, that are feeling that exact same thing, that they're not ready yet.
And I think what you said is right. Like, don't pull down people for speaking up if they're not speaking up in the way that you like them to speak up. If you think that you could do it differently, do it differently. We need as many voices as possible.
We need as many voices as possible. And also something I say too, because I have seen some people like just now kind of start to do it. I don't think we should, like, if someone is just starting now to talk, to talk, let's uplift them. Let's not say, why didn't you say anything earlier? Let's be thankful and let's uplift them. Any voice or anyone that is, even if it's a year later, we should just be thankful and be uplifting them. And any person we see, and especially our allies who aren't Jewish and who don't have any ties to Israel, whatever it may be, we need to uplift them all.
100%. I tell people that I've seen, like, oh, why is he only speaking up now? I tell them, take any person who's speaking up, I guarantee there's someone who started speaking up before them.
Yeah.
So as long as we're speaking up.
Exactly.
So Montana, I like ending this episode with what I've been calling the Jewish lightning round. It's a series of questions. There's no right or wrong answer. Just tell me the first thing that comes to mind.
Uh-oh, okay.
You get one pass and I get to decide whether you get that pass.
Oh my God, okay.
Montana Tucker, what is one thing people don't know about you?
One thing people don't know about me is I'm a pretty good tennis and pickleball player, I think.
Right.
I just love tennis and pickleball, but I would say I'm pretty good.
What is one thing people don't know about the Jews?
One thing people don't know about the Jews is, I think this is a big thing to say. Jews are a minority. I think that people forget that, and people think that Jews are just so powerful and so this and that, and don't realize that Jews are actually a minority.
A tiny
world.
Minority. Uh-huh. What is your favorite curse?
My favorite curse?
Yeah.
What does that mean?
Like, do you curse?
Oh my gosh, do I curse? Okay, if any of my friends hear this, they would laugh, because my whole entire life, I never cursed. Like, I would be that girl that would spell out the curse words, always. And I still do it right now. But the only time I do curse is when I play pickleball, because I get so angry.
So what is it? What do you say?
I can't say it.
Okay, I'll give you a pass. When was the last time you cried?
Oh, I cry all the time. Anyone that knows me knows I'm the most emotional person, so I cry literally all the time. God, I feel like I just cried the other day. I was hysterical when I found out about the six hostages. That was really bad. I was actually in the Hamptons enjoying a very fun time with my friends, and then I found out about the hostages, and everything just crashed and I canceled everything for the next few days. So I would say that's the last time I had a really big cry.
If you could have any person over for Shabbat dinner from any moment in history, who would that be?
Of course, you. Of course.
Anyone else?
But I would have we would make a really big, big Shabbat. We'd have you. We would have Golda Meir. Mm-hmm. I think she'd be a pretty good Shabbat guest. What do you think?
I think she'd be a downer, but I think I'd want to hear what she has to say.
I would want to hear her speak.
But it would have to be no smoking.
No smoking.
So she might not want to come.
God, I could make a list, but you guys are my top two.
All right, me and Golda. I'll take it. What's your favorite Jewish holiday?
Hanukkah.
What's your least favorite Jewish holiday?
My least favorite? Maybe Yom Kippur. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I love all of the holidays, I feel like.
When do you feel safest?
And do I feel safest when I'm home, when I'm in bed, like by myself? That's when I feel safest.
When do you feel least safe?
When do I feel least safe? It's interesting, because I feel like in situations that you would think I don't feel safe, I really do feel safe. Like, people get nervous when I go out there and film these videos. But it actually, like, fuels me so much to want to do these, or when I speak at a rally, or when I go to Israel. Actually, I feel safest when I'm in Israel.
Hmm.
And I know that sounds crazy.
No, me too. Me too.
But I truly feel safest when I'm in Israel. Every time I go, everyone's so nervous. All my friends, all my family is so nervous for me to go. I'm like, I truly feel safer there than I do here. To be in a place that is surrounded by so much pride, so much love, by so many different religions, ethnicities, where you're free to be who you are and who you want to be in Israel. And despite it being a war right now, I feel safest there.
What gives you hope?
What gives me hope is, I'm sorry, I keep referring to them, but my grandparents, after the Holocaust, they came to the US with absolutely nothing. And you would think that they would have so much hate inside of them for what people did to them, what people did to their family, people did to their friends, for their people. But they ended up being the most loving people in the world. And they instilled that to my mom, who instilled that to me, to you love a person for their kind heart and good soul, not for their race, ethnicity, religion. And they built such incredible lives for themselves after the Holocaust. And I think that's something about Jews in general, is I feel like we really are resilient. We really don't give up. And that's what I learned from my grandparents. And I think that after this, we're going to, this, like you said, this too shall pass. And we will come out of this stronger. And I know it might not seem it right now, but I do believe it. I believe I've personally seen Jews come together in a way I've never seen before. I've built such amazing relationships. I'm so thankful to have met you through this. And I think that we will come out on the other end stronger, more united. And I think we need to keep that in mind, despite how hard it is right now, that we will come out of this and we will be stronger.
Amen.
Amen.
What is the first thing that comes to mind when you hear the words Jewish civil rights?
Ooh. I feel like that sentence, that those three words aren't said a lot, which is interesting. I feel like you hear about civil rights for kind of all other groups. I haven't been in school in a long time, but I think even growing up and in school, you learn about civil rights and you learn about all other civil rights, but you don't really learn about Jewish civil rights. And those three words aren't, I mean, those two words aren't really three words, Jewish civil rights, aren't said a lot. So I would say that those are words that need to be said more and need to be talked about more.
And finally, every episode, I urge the listeners to donate to one charity that does good in Israel or across the Jewish diaspora. Where would you want people to donate to this week?
Ooh, I think FIDF, I think, is amazing what they do. Again, David Adom is amazing. Gosh, I work with so many organizations, so I feel bad leaving them out. But I think those two specifically, I've seen what they do on the ground. Like when I have been to Israel, I've physically seen with my own eyes what they do.
FIDF is the Friends of IDF. They give
Friends
them,
of IDF.
Yes. Ambulances. They give them drones. They give them everything that's not attack weapens or anything. So yes, all defensive, exactly. All defensive shields. And then Magen David Adom is obviously the Israeli Jewish Red Cross, which, unlike the Red Cross, who only cares about victims that are not Jewish, Magen David Adom cares about everyone and treats everyone.
Yep. Yeah. So again, there are so many organizations, and I think I'm so grateful for all of them. But I would say those two specifically are, I I've seen it with my own eyes. I see what they do, and I think they're incredible.
Montana, where can people find you?
You can find me anywhere on social media, Montana Tucker, MontanaTucker. And I'm constantly posting every day different things. So I hope you guys, hopefully you watch my docuseries, How to Never Forget, the Nova Dance video, which is on my social media. And then hopefully soon you'll see a video with Shai and I.
Yes, okay? I'm looking forward to doing something with you. And I just have to tell people that are listening in, even if you take like 5 minutes to go on YouTube and watch our conversation on YouTube, because there's something about the positivity, the light that you radiate in person, or just like looking at you when you're, it doesn't, I don't think people just listening would get that. So I urge everyone to just spend 5-10 minutes on the YouTube channel and actually see our conversation. And I'm very happy to say this. So here I am with Montana Tucker.
Hi, I'm Michael Greenspan, Shai's father-in-law. I'd like to thank you for listening to the Here I Am podcast with Shai Davidai. Here I Am is recorded at the Cave Production House in Hackensack, New Jersey, and is brought to you in partnership with Abby Sophia and Adamit Productions. You can find us on Instagram, YouTube, and wherever you get your favorite podcasts. I'd also like to extend my deepest gratitude to everyone at Adamit Productions for turning Shai's dream into a reality, and to all our donors and partners for their unwavering commitment to fighting for Jewish civil rights. Most importantly, I'd like to thank you, our listeners. Let's be honest, none of this would have been possible without your support and dedication. Showing up is half the battle. Thank you for showing up. Thank you for being there. Thank you for saying, "Here I am."